A reading from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 10, verses 24 through 39. A disciple is not above the teacher, nor a slave above the master. It is enough for the disciple to be like the teacher, and the servant like the master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those in his household? So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered up that will not be uncovered, and nothing secret that will not become known. What I say to you in the dark, tell in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim from the housetops. Do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both the soul and the body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? Yet not one of them will fall to the ground unperceived by your Father. And even the hairs of your head are all counted. So do not be afraid. You are of more value than many sparrows. Everyone, therefore, who acknowledges me before others, I also will acknowledge before my Father in heaven. But whoever denies me before others, I will also deny before my Father in heaven. Do not think that I have come to bring peace on earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set man against his father, and daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and one's foes will be members of one's own household. Whoever loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. You join me in prayer. Gracious God, guide my words that they might be acceptable in your sight. Share with us your wisdom that we might be filled with depth of understanding. Amen. Good morning, church. Thank you very much for the invitation to join you this morning for worship. My name is Andrea Davis, and I currently serve as the youth pastor at Church of the Beatitudes in Phoenix. I've been serving Church of the Beatitudes since September, though that was my home congregation, and just received a call in early June to be ordained as associate pastor. I hope you will all join me for my ordination in the fall. It is a pleasure to be spending this morning with this gathered community. I've already met a fair number of you this morning and in previous engagements, and I've been met with nothing but open arms and love. Thank you for extending your extravagant welcome to me. I'd also like to extend my thanks to Pastor Judy for the invitation to preach. I've shared my friendship with Judy for several years now, and though I won't share my entire faith journey with you right now, we can do that at fellowship time, I will share that I came to the church from an unchurched background. My mother is a devout atheist, and my father identifies as a pagan. I know. I somehow made the bizarre journey to Church of the Beatitudes, and Judy was one of those crucial people who welcomed me into this space that was entirely new for me. Indeed, it was also Judy who first encouraged me to explore my call from God to go into the ministry. For a number of reasons, I think it's miraculous that I'm standing here before you today. As one who was raised in a family that was not only unchurched but vehemently opposed to the church, the United Church of Christ was a bizarre community to find myself in at last. Likewise, I'm a young person. I'm bucking the trend of my generation who find more peace and comfort at community potlucks than at community worship. And perhaps, and this is maybe most intriguing for a nerd like me, is that I found myself at an institutional church, Beatitudes, and I suspect also Church of the Palms, is a formalized community that values walls and windows and parking lots in a time in which that type of church, the building church, is derided as a relic of the past. We invest substantial resources into our physical plants when all of the church theory is telling us that the walls are what's holding us back. Church, they say, has got to change or it will never survive. On one hand, I think there's truth to these claims. The threat to the church, ultimately, is very real. Churches with large footprints are being forced to sell their property to make ends meet. Pews and hymnals are gathering dust for lack of use, and the public discourse looks upon communities and people of faith with, in many instances, earned distrust. My generation, which would be the postmodern and millennial generation, with some exceptions, has almost wholly given up on the church as we know it. And in fact, even history is on the side of change. We are in the midst of what theologian Phyllis Tickle calls the Great Emergence. We're living through a cycle of reformation that occurs every 500-ish years or so. 500 years ago, we had the Protestant Reformation. Before that, the Great Schism between Eastern and Western churches. Before that, the fall of Rome. And before that, Jesus. Even in light of all the change that we are experiencing, and even as churches change or take new forms, even as people of my generation forsake Sunday morning worship in favor of Sunday morning brunch, I have to echo the words of the Reverend John Dorhauer, the conference minister of the United Church of Christ in the Southwest, who says, "While church as we know it is changing forms, and maybe even disappearing altogether, the gospel message is alive and well." But sometimes we lose sight of the gospel, even as it sits right before our eyes. In our resistance to change and new experiences, we don't always open ourselves to new opportunities and events where God might make God's self present, known to us. And I think it's been that way for eons. Did we not just hear from the prophet Isaiah, who said the following words, "Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told to you from the beginning? Have you not understood the foundations of the earth? Do you not remember the former things and consider the things of old? I'm about to do a new thing. Now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it?" But I wonder if the current trend away from all that is institutional, in the diminishment of tradition and ritual and all of those things that gives our lives order and meaning, I wonder if, in speaking of these things, which my generation is prone to do, we are in some ways missing opportunities for God's Spirit to flow through us and bring out new experiences and new understandings. I have a story about myself. A few weeks ago, I spent 7 days outside of Prescott at Emmanuel Pines Camp with over 100 children and youth from across the Southwest Conference. So that included children and youth and counselors from Arizona, New Mexico, and El Paso. We were a motley crew. I must admit to you, when I packed my bags and headed to northern Arizona, I was adamant that I wasn't going to write a camp sermon. In fact, I was fairly adamant that I was going to go to camp, have an awful, terrible time, and never speak of the experience again. Yeah. Now, this is not, as some people who falsely claimed, because I have some fear of bugs. In fact, much to the disgust of my cabin full of junior high-age girls, I find bugs to be quite interesting. In reality, I enjoy every opportunity I get to pack up my sleeping bag and leave the city. The smell of pine trees and clean, fresh air refreshes my body and soul in a way that doesn't happen here in the city. Camping for me is a spiritual experience. I know I will always, always find God there. It's God of the wild. God is present. But camp was not something I was looking forward to. Going to camp, I found myself anticipating frustration with the normal quirks that typify human existence. The lack of organization that happens when you gather 150 plus people ranging in age and experience in the semi-wilderness. Whining, tired, and homesick young people, questionable camp food, cold showers, and all that screaming about bugs. Let's just say I knew for certain I was going to be uncomfortable, and I wasn't entirely sure that God was going to be present there. But I was wrong. Even though the normal quirks were present, and even though the frustrations sometimes ran high and not everybody demonstrated their best behavior, and even though we were all on some level uncomfortable, God was present there. My colleague and friend Lillian Daniel once wrote a reflection in the daily UCC devotional entitled, "Spiritual but Not Religious? Stop Boring Me." She writes, "On airplanes, I dread the conversation with the person who finds out I'm a minister and wants to use the flight to explain that he is spiritual, but not religious. Such a person will always share this as if it's some kind of daring insight, unique to him, bold in its rebellion against the religious status quo. Next thing you know, he's telling me that he finds God in the sunsets. These people always find God in the sunsets and walks on the beach and camping. Sometimes I think these people never leave the beach or the sunsets or the mountaintops with all that communing with God that they do. Like people who go to church don't see God in the sunsets. Like we are these monastic little hermits who never leave the church building. How lucky are we to have these geniuses inform us that God is in the nature, as if we don't hear that in the Psalms, in the creation stories, and throughout our deep traditions." She continues, "Being privately spiritual but not religious just doesn't interest me. There's nothing challenging about having deep thoughts all by oneself. What's interesting is doing this work in community, where other people might call you on our stuff, or heaven forbid, disagree with you. When life with God gets rich and provocative is when you dig deeply into the tradition that you did not found all by yourself. For many, the work of being in community is just too hard. The pain and burden of struggling through times of transition are too much and perhaps too human. So we seek sustenance elsewhere. We find peace in sunsets and beaches and in rainstorms here in Arizona, but we don't see God in the face of those around us. We don't necessarily feel God's comfort in time of pain or loss, or know God's creative presence in times of challenge that push us to loftier heights." Today's gospel reading shares a message of Jesus that may be foreign to many of us. He uses language that seems shocking and even contradictory to the image of Jesus that we know, the one who we call the Prince of Peace. He says, "Do not think I have come to bring peace on earth. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set man against his father, and daughter against her mother, and daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, and one's foes will become part of one's household. Whoever loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me, and whoever does not take up the cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Those who find their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it." That's hard. In this passage, Jesus, I think, is calling us to be religious and not spiritual. Taken at face value, this passage is jarring, if not painful. It seems that Jesus is saying, "Cut yourself off from your community you love and follow me. Be ready to give up your physical self and succumb to death for my sake." Violence and divisiveness are key. I wonder, however, if Jesus is asking us not to cut ourselves off from those wholly from those we love, from our family and friends, but is rather summoning us to move outside of our comfort zones. On this Sunday after Independence Day, I can't help to also reflect on this passage in a new light. Perhaps we as a country are called not to raise our swords in offense or build walls of protection and defense, but rather to live into this country's legacy by taking bold risks, seeking new adventures, meeting people where they're at, knowing that, as different as we all may be, we all are all seeking the shared goal of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Jesus, I wonder, is asking us not to seek assurances from the ones who will affirm us blindly and support our every mission, but rather to create community with those from whom we are different, and with those with whom we struggle, and those with whom we disagree. For it's out there, on the margins. It's beyond the scope of what we can even possibly imagine. It's in the down and dirty interpersonal connection of exhaustion and grief and sadness and joy and laughter and healing and knowing that someone is there to hold your hand when things go wrong, that we find God. It's not only in the families into which we are born, but also into the families in which we create around ourselves, that God is known to us. I've heard with great joy that Church of the Palms has just recently gone through the process of writing and passing your open and affirming statement. This is hard work, and you should be immensely proud of yourselves. No matter what you believe individually, you have made a commitment as a church for the church, and not just for the church in this moment, but for the church in generations to come. I'll tell you another story. Early this week, I received an email from a young woman. She's in her teens. She identifies as a lesbian. She hadn't been to church for many years, and her home church, she told me, had abused and humiliated her. She was looking for a new church family. Would Beatitudes be a good place for her? She wanted to know. Of course, I responded. We're open and affirming. We have people from many different backgrounds. We are all beloved children of God, no matter our age, our race, our ability, our gender, our sexual orientation. Wonderful, she responded. And then a little while later, I got an email. She said, I just realized I live about 3 hours away by city bus. There aren't any churches that I can find that are closer to me. Church of the Palms, you have made a commitment to be open and affirming congregation. Knowing that, I have no qualms about directing this young woman here and saying that she might have a church family amongst you. Jesus said that we will be set apart from our families and all that we know and trust, not so that we might be alone, but so that our families might expand, so that we might know God in new and different ways. This is the spirit that's in this room today and with this congregation. May it always be so. Amen.